And there is a sense that if we really amplify ESG in countries of Africa, we might see the needle shift to really start to adopt more developmental outcomes in how our countries are run. And so let's ask the experts what they think. We're joined by Pietso Kortias, who is from the Finance and Banking Department at Cliff Decker Hofmeyr. And we're also joined by Ron Stewart, who's the Head of Markets and the ESG Lead at KPMG. Pietso, good morning.
Morning, Lerato.
And Ron, good morning.
Good morning, Lerato.
Okay, so Pietso, did I oversimplify it, or are we sort of on the right track in understanding what ESG is supposed to be doing?
You summarized it perfectly there, Lerato, because you did indicate there that today's investors are looking at ways to put their capital to work in a more sustainable way, kind of something focused on avoiding harm to people and planet and creating long-term value through socially desirable activities. So yes, 100% Delarapa.
Okay, Ron, let's bring you in. I've often heard ESG, and then people will use a mantra, people, planet, prosperity, and these concepts kind of work together. ESG, people, planet, prosperity. What is meant by all this?
Yeah, really good question. And it's not an easy question to summarize briefly. Obviously, ESG is for environmental, social, and governance. But it is really multidisciplinary and multifaceted, and therefore becomes a really complicated concept to grasp. But you said it very well in your introductions that when we speak about ESG, fundamentally it comes from the origins of the discussions around sustainability. And you mentioned triple bottom line, which is a period of time when it was called triple bottom line. And sustainability at its heart really means that the generation of today needs to look after the generation of to come into the future and not exploit all the resources for short-term gains and leave the problems that many times we are now starting to stack up to our children. And I can assure you, my kids look at me and sometimes they look at the adults in the room and saying, what are you guys doing? And there's a lot of work to do. That can be achieved through appropriate environmental, social, and governance.
So, Pietso, you know, in boardrooms, in the investment community, this is becoming a very big theme because there is a sense that if you don't comply, you're going to be penalized, especially if you think of Britain right now, that's introduced a policy that says that British companies may not invest in any business that has fossil fuel legacy issues. So even a British investment firm wants to do business in South Africa, when it asks you, who are your clients? And some of your clients are big oil companies. They can't do business with you technically because they'll be penalized in their country. So there is a sense that now compliance is going to be a big thing. But there are complaints that over-compliance means that people are not doing ESG for ESG's sake. They're doing it so that they don't get into trouble.
Yeah, that's correct. And I guess the principle there would really be a well-conceived ESG strategy implemented correctly in addressing societal issues will create the long-term value for stakeholders and the country or communities at large. And if not implemented correctly, we really miss the point and what we're trying to then achieve in terms of long-term value creation or sustainability is then not achieved just because you're trying to necessarily stay out of trouble. Mm.
I think, Ron, if I was to use another kind of example, is like BEE in South Africa. We know that you need a redistributive policy in a country like South Africa with its history. But when everything has to comply with quotas, you're no longer transforming for the sake of transformation. You are just doing it so that you can check the box. And there's a concern that ESG would run the similar risk, is that you wouldn't be doing conscientious investing for the sake of conscientious investing. You'd be doing it so that you are complying.
Yeah, Lerato, I agree with Pitso. It has to be far more integral than being a compliance exercise. And even in your example of BEE, we can see some of the successes when it's taken up in the heart of a business to transform and drive diversity, equity, and inclusion within the business. But if it's done for mere compliance purposes, it often fails. And we then enter the world of, in ESG, of so-called greenwashing, where things are done just to put a veneer onto that. And it's one of the reasons why I think from a South African point of view, we're taking a cautious approach to this. In the developed world, there are a lot of compliance requirements coming through. And as you rightly say, that's quite expensive and onerous to comply with. And as the maturity comes through at the right time, I'm sure that regulations will be adopted locally as well. Mm. Without suggesting for a moment that we're standing back, BEE is a great example of a social justice act as part of ESG. But also in the governance space, we've been leading in a big way the world of governance, corporate governance standards with the adoption of our King Code that has been in circulation since the 90s. Mm. So there's many facets that I think we are leading as a society and as an economy. And then there are some facets that I think we're watching out for carefully to make sure we get the balance right.
Some terminology that Ron has referred to, Pizzo, is greenwashing, and he compares it to fronting. So in BEE, we saw fronting, where people don't really have transformation in the organization. They just have a couple of black faces. You don't want that in the ESG space, where it looks like you've got green credentials. Not really, but it, on the surface, it looks like it.
Yeah, that's correct. So you're putting in place policies that seem to promote BEE, but in actual fact, this is misleading to the public, to even the individuals involved in the process. So they're not actually getting the skills development that technically BEE is intended to achieve, or any kind of diversity in the company is not achieved in the way that ordinarily what BE codes, right, etc. would want to achieve.
So how does greenwashing work as a similar kind of problem?
So in greenwashing, it's really more when you're reporting on your ESG credentials or your application of ESG. So for example, if you have an environmental policy to reduce emissions or reduce waste. Mm. In the reporting, what you would then do is technically provide information that is not substantiated by independent verification agencies, etc. That's information that you've just really done a calculation of your emissions as against emissions that were done in the previous year. And that is technically what you end up doing in misleading in your reporting.
Okay.
So technically acting as if you are actually achieving those emissions, or the reductions in those emissions.
Okay. So let me ask you a question, Pizzo. For a company that's doing business in South Africa, a country with its complexities, right? Racial complexities, polarities, inequalities, you know, and now it's high inflation. There's just many, many things that are unfortunate in the South Africa of 2023. What would be a really conscientious form of investing for social impact, aligning with the principles of governance as the world understands it, sustainability in an environmental term? What would be a great ESG strategy in a country like South Africa?
I guess looking at where we are in terms of power and load shedding and coal being one of the things that has been looked at in a bad light, one would look at companies that are looking at moving away from those using electricity. I mean, not relying on Eskom, but just really moving to more sustainable power and energy sources. Technically, those companies in a country like ours and the current state we're in with load shedding as a daily feature, you would look at those kind of companies that are really looking at sustainable and or energy sources that look to use green or which are green.
Ron, I'd like you to add to this, because there is a concept I've heard, which I like. I think some say conscientious investing, some say corporate citizenship. And I think embedded in that is a company that would have an ESG focus. If you're a good corporate citizen, you would see the people first, the community first. You would think about the environment. You'd think about the laws, the rules and regulations. So what would be a great way of going about it in South Africa?
So firstly, and you mentioned Africa earlier. I think Africa's got a phenomenal opportunity in this world of ESG to also maximize the returns for the continent. We are rich. We are endowed with resources. We've got significant arable land, and we've got the future consumer market of the world in terms of a generational dividend that comes through. So when we speak to our clients and we advise our clients, we do advise them to look at the whole spectrum of stakeholders. And employees, as you mentioned, really important, because this is not a presentation deck or just a conversation. It has to be owned by the business and its employees. But similarly, we will then include in the stakeholder grouping that a organization needs to look at customers and their consumers. They need to look at the regulators. And then what is important in looking at the execution strategies is working in collaboration. The often sort of under-emphasized Sustainable Development Goal is Sustainable Development Goal 17, which really talks about partnerships. And the way that I think about partnerships is globally, is how we think about Ubuntu locally, is how do we work better together. And therefore, when we think about this example around renewables, it's not only about renewables, it's also the adjacent industries, those small and medium enterprises that need support to supply the renewables, that will do the maintenance afterwards. Some of the smaller mining companies that want to actually build manufacturing outlets, so that as a community and as a region and as a continent, we invest to become stronger together in the global markets. And that we get noted for not only our minerals, but also the value that we add to our societies and then to the global economy.
Pizzo, what examples do we have anywhere in the world, but where ESG is a central focus of an investment strategy, communities thrive? I guess it's a best practice example.
I mean, you mentioned the UK earlier. I think the UK is moving swiftly in regulating the environments in which their businesses are operating, where they require that businesses, kind of the investments, are ESG focused, and the economies there have moved in this post-pandemic environment much quicker than any other economy, which technically hasn't necessarily regulated it, but although it is a feature of that economy, the regulations have played a big part in actually assisting in those economies thrive, and requiring that those businesses invest in technically future-proof type investments or businesses.
Okay. Would it be fair, Ron, to say some of the challenges that African countries have had, especially big resource-rich countries, is because there wasn't an ESG focus? So we've just been having a whole conversation on what caused the tremor. Could it have been the mining sector? Yes or no? And Peter Major really painted a picture for us of the interventions over time that the mining industries had to make to make it safer for workers and safer for the actual process of extraction, that there's been heavy compliance and regulation of the sector. And so you can say that's an example of ESG processes that now work. But if you took a similar example in the DRC or countries like Sierra Leone, where we've heard about conflict diamonds, where we're hearing about landslides, where we're hearing about young people being made to work some of these mines, that's a complete failure of ESG.
Indeed, and I couldn't agree with you more. And I think what happens in the ESG narrative globally is that there's a more nuanced focus on the environment. Now, we know the environment cannot operate without society at large, but it's probably fair to say that the social pillar of ESG in an emerging market, in an Africa continent point of view, is even more fundamental to get right. And the examples you quoted in the DRC are exactly those type of examples that should not be happening with a responsible ESG global framework. Now, I do believe that these things will improve and mature over a period of time because of all the global supply chains being interconnected. Certainly, some of the global majors would be looking today very closely at where they buy from, who they buy from, and the practices and disciplines of those suppliers. And certainly the more notable luminaries in the ESG world will be looking at labor practices, fair remuneration, ensuring that there's no child labor. And if that is the case, they will disengage totally, which means that hopefully the greater good takes over and that these rogue examples get undermined over a period of time and re-enhance ourselves. Right. But I think we need to take personal accountability within the continent to also address the issues that you raise.
Pete, so another concept embedded in the ESG discourse is that of shared value, right? That when a company operates in any area and does really well, those windfalls are not just profits for shareholders, bonuses for executives, but it's also benefits for the community. Shared value. Everybody shares in the story. So what are great examples of it happening in South Africa?
I mean, I guess looking at South African context and going back to BEE, where it is implemented correctly, I mean, you would have companies having robust transformation strategies and which drive Employment Equity, and Employment Equity Act seeks to achieve employment equity. And in so doing, they would be dealing with unemployment issues in that community and at the same time enable that specific business to have a workforce, which in also kind of then contributes to that business's a wider pool of
Oh, your line is breaking. Your line is breaking. Let's try again.
I don't know where we missed each other, but I was just talking about a diverse workforce where there is a reputational benefit to the company having a diverse workforce, and also, I guess, the community dealing with unemployment issues.
Okay, we're still struggling to hear you. So maybe, Ron, can I pass on the baton to you and ask you to take us forward from where Pizzo has just left us? So it would really work well in South Africa if you try to create employment opportunities for the local community and you try to introduce diversity in the workforce of gender, of race, of people of sexual orientation, religion, and what else?
So I think there are certainly leading companies that embrace shared value already. And if you read the annual reports, the integrated reports, they will be calling out their objectives to share value amongst communities, customers, their employees, their executives, but also the shareholders who provide the capital. But I would add to the example is to say that everybody's also started to say, how do we measure this impact? How do we measure shared value? Because it is not good enough anymore just to have a corporate social investment program on the side that is funded through a foundation of some sort. There is some real engagement by corporate South Africa today around how do we spend our money to ensure that these objectives are met around shared value, which includes the communities they operate in and includes objectives such as digital inclusion and financial inclusion, education, health, and similar type of objectives. Because business understands that if they've got healthy communities, thriving communities, prosperous communities, then the benefits will also accrue back to the business and it becomes a synergistic shared value engagement. But certainly that's a real focus and we see more momentum building in the shared value conversation as well as reporting and measurement in that space.
Okay, so it's very important to track. Thank you so much for really introducing us to the concepts of ESG, and I hope with time we can take it forward as we start to say, you know, when business is not sitting on the fence and is being really part of the solution, and I know I'm being overly critical right now, how can they go about really tapping into the challenges that ordinary people feel on the ground? And I know business would say, but we are huge employers in the country, right? Mining employs almost 500,000 people. The health sector, we're talking tens of thousands. So we are part of the solution, but how can we do it better? And ESG, we're told, is one of those ways. So hopefully we can do a round two of this conversation. Ron Stewart, Head of Markets and ESG Lead at KPMG, and also Pizzo Cortias from the Finance and Banking Department at Cliff Decker Hofmeyr. Time for the news.